Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. One of the fascinating things about the transition from old energy to new energy, and one of the things I love about my job in doing these podcasts, is looking at how the sector's changing, the opportunities, the challenges, the dynamics in the market. We've looked at the topic of heat in a few of our podcasts, and we're coming back to that topic today. Last week in London, we held our annual European Heat Summit, an annual event that Delta EE holds. And we had a fascinating couple of days talking about the dynamics, the changes in the heat sector. And I'm delighted to be joined here today by my colleague, Lindsay Sugden, who leads our heat research and led the summit. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi, John.
So we'll be talking about some of the key themes from the European heating sector. I caught up with a few of our speakers at the summit, and we'll hear from them in the episode today as well. Now, apologies, everyone. This is a bit of a horrible play on words, but I couldn't resist it. Heat is certainly getting hotter, in my view. We're seeing more and more interest in the heating sector, I think shown by the number and range of people we had at our heat summit last week, but also by changes in the sector. Lindsay, using my play of words of heat getting hotter, why do you think that is? So in your view, what are the key things that mean we see heat rising up the agenda today?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is that heat is increasingly under the spotlight from a decarbonisation perspective, which means that there's increasing levels of ambition from policymakers to tackle heat from buildings. And then the second thing is that the traditional way of selling heating products is evolving. So we're seeing much more of a move towards selling solutions rather than just heating products.
Okay, and I guess these are both a reflection of some of the macro trends. We all know the decarbonisation trend, and we see the trend in other industries outside of energy moving from the shift from selling products to selling services and solutions. Lindsay, a bit of a thought experiment. If we took away all that policy driver, all that decarbonisation driver, do you think we'd see a sector that is static and not changing and going to carry on just as it was? Or do you think this driver from products to services and solutions is a distinct driver of its own?
Yeah, I think we would definitely still see an evolving market even if decarbonisation wasn't happening. The key point is that the competitive environment is evolving. We're seeing big players, kind of household names from outside the energy industry, and we're seeing new startups all coming into the heating market and trying to capture a share of the emerging market opportunity. So this means that the incumbent heating players really have to change tact. So the market is changing.
And when you put put the two of those together, and that then becomes quite a potent mix and quite an exciting, challenging, for some scary market maybe. Now let's look at some of the key themes coming out of the summit. So we've got five themes to go through. The first of those is this move to solutions that you've already talked about. Now, it's a nice concept, it's easy words, but can you make that a bit more tangible, Lindsay, in terms of what this move to solutions actually is, or some examples of it?
Yeah, a couple of examples in terms of the move to solutions. Heat as a service was a really hot topic at the summit this year, so we're seeing a lot of companies either selling already or planning to sell heat on a type of contract instead of selling heating appliances as one-off sales.
And I, it was really interesting for me to see the presentations we had, one from a big manufacturer, one from an energy company, and some startups all moving in that direction.
Yeah, so a lot of different types of players, all with the same plan to sell a kind of heat as a service.
Okay, so of the solutions, one type of solution could be heat as a service. Have you got a second example?
Yeah, the concept of moving beyond the heating appliance itself, so offering a more of an end-to-end whole house retrofit solution, which includes the heating but may also include insulation and so on. So we saw a couple of examples of that at the summit, and this is something that we think has a lot of potential as well.
And those of you that have followed all of my podcasts will remember an episode where we looked at exactly this. So if you haven't listened to that episode, have a look at the library and you'll see a couple on heat as a service and these bundles of products plus solutions. So solutions is the first theme. The second theme is digitalization. Now, again, easy word. Every sector is talking about digitalization to differing degrees. How do you see digitalization in the heating sector, Lindsay?
Digitalization has clearly firmly embedded itself right across the heating value chain. So, all the way from lead generation for installers to enhancing the functionality of products and enhancing the customer experience. So, it's really creating a lot of opportunities for new business models.
And it's one of those business models, and it's well, one of those business models is the integration or the crossover between the heating sector and the electricity sector. So this is another big theme, I think, of integration of electric heating with the electricity sector. And I caught up with one of our speakers to talk exactly about that. So John Tillema from Dutch company TWTG. So I'm here with John Tillema from TWTG. John, I want to ask you in a minute about your smart boiler solution you're rolling out in the Netherlands. But first of all, the name TWTG, it's not the catchiest of names, but what does it stand
Definitely
for?
not, but easiest to remember is just to remember it as the way to go. That might be the easiest one to do.
The way to go. Right, well, let's now look at the way to go with smart boilers.
Thanks.
So you're working with electric boilers, and what are you doing with those electric boilers?
Electric warm water boilers,
Yep.
and focusing on to actually retrofit them, so existing retrofit of the boilers already installed in homes,
Yep.
and to make them remote accessible in order to use them as sort of battery of
Right.
some sort, to actually use the overcapacity that they have in normal households. To relax the grid at certain point to do peak shaving in the end.
Okay, so and how many of these smart boilers or how many of these retrofit controllers have you put on
We are
these smart
currently
boilers?
running out 20,000 in the Netherlands together with Eneco and Peaks,
Okay.
just as a first batch, and that batch is actually now being approved by TenneT that we can use it actually to do the peak shaving of the net.
So TenneT use it from a system operation level to manage the overall transmission system.
Yeah, for a flexible rating and everything else from the electric grid.
Okay, and you mentioned Eneco, one of the Dutch energy companies, energy retailers.
Yep.
How are you working with them? What are they doing with their smart boilers?
Actually, they are the initiator of the project. So, as an innovative company, basically, they're looking forward on ways to serve the end clients better. Because that's the idea of Eneco as a partner, is that they actually control these boilers
Okay.
With a service contract and everything around. So, they have a say about these boilers. It's in their benefit as well.
Yeah.
But also, have on the whole, completely other opposite, they have a trading room. So, they also can control and be flexible with this energy trading, basically. So, that's really important in order to make this end-to-end solution work.
And 20,000 boilers gives them some scale for their
Correct.
trading room.
Yeah, it's just a start.
Yeah.
And in order to do this fully, you need this high volume. Like, one boiler doesn't make a really big
No.
difference. The main goal is that if you have like all boilers, electrical boilers, warm water boilers in Holland connected to this, that you would have no need other ways to do peak shaving at all.
And how long has it taken to get to 20,000? Because that's quite an impressive number. Has that been many years? Or?
No, we're just starting rolling out, I think 6-7 months ago or something. So it's actually happening quite fast.
And you're reaching the customers. You're not working so much with the individual householders, but you're going through housing associations. Is that right?
Yeah, like I said, these boilers are controlled by Eneco themselves. Yep. So they have service contracts around these boilers. The ownership is from them. But at the end, it's still the consumer that needs to sign off that they are willing to have this connectivity in their house. Yep. And you see there is also a lot of things changing. So, I mean, it gives the end consumer a way of control over their own boiler, but also a way of contributing to an energy change and basically transforming their electrical warm water boiler, which normally was just like an odd thing in a kitchen closet doing nothing. And now suddenly you have control of it. You benefit by himself from a higher level of comfort because it's actually more accurate being switched on and off. But on the other side, you're also contributing to a change in energy switch, basically, in the Netherlands at all.
Yeah. And how hard is the technology? Because you are fundamentally an IoT or a tech company.
Yeah, we're a research development agency. So the device itself, I mean, I can talk for hours about it, but the whole idea is from the whole chain end-to-end that other companies should not worry about that. Mm. But in order to do that, make the retrofit solution, so you don't need to change the boilers at all, we're actually adding it to existing boilers, and do that safe, that you can do it in a consumer housing, fully certified, but also like unhackable as possible, have their own connectivity backhaul with really low latencies, because if you want to switch on within these flexible things, you have to have like an immediate connection with trading room and know which capacity which you can switch on, calculate the existing charge rate of a boiler, so how many energy I can still put in there safely.
Yeah.
There's a lot of technical things going on, so that was a lot of development work and testing and certificating to get there.
I can imagine. And the amount of kilowatts per electric boiler, are we what's the typical capacity you're getting from each?
Hard to say. We support a lot of big, so the 80-liter kind of boilers for normal household, all the way down to smaller ones at kitchen sinks.
Okay.
So there's a lot of big difference in there. And like normal operations, we try not to touch that. So the boiler, the module itself will recognize how the boiler is being used. So if you have a 5-person household, you probably use all your capacity in your boiler anyways. So there's a really small of capacity that we can reuse for flexible connectivity.
Yeah.
But if you have, when you see that a lot, we see a 50-60% of range per boiler in use for these kind of applications.
Okay.
Which makes it really interesting to combine that power and use it for this flexible way.
And 20,000 so far? How many in 1 year's time, 2 years' time?
We'll see. The 20,000 is still in progress, so we'll see that even the feedback needs to come back and see.
Sure.
It's a pilot batch, basically.
Yeah.
We hope to roll it out further.
Okay.
And also looking to different countries as well.
Well, John, thanks for explaining that, and good luck.
Thanks.
Okay. So the third theme that we've pulled out is technology. Lindsay, what would be the technology highlight from the summit?
One topic which was clearly very popular was hybrids. And we've talked about hybrids.
For our listeners, Lindsay, hybrids, would you explain what we mean by that?
Yeah, okay. Okay, so one topic which was really popular and sparked a lot of discussion at the summit was the concept of hybrids, so an electric heat pump combined with a gas boiler. We've been talking about this for a long time, and the market is still immature. There are not that many installations, but we're seeing a lot of interest from both heating industry players and policymakers.
What's driving that, do you think, Lindsay, or what would you pull out as the main drivers?
I think two things. Hybrids are potentially enabling a kind of balanced transition to a lower carbon heating sector, where there's you still leave the door open for both the hydrogen future and electrification future. And then the second reason is the potential for hybrids to provide energy system flexibility.
Okay.
So being able to switch between gas and electricity.
And they can also... I've actually just installed a hybrid in my own house, and the reason for that is that was the easiest, almost straightforward retrofit solution for my house. So I see them also being a good way to tackle the, in some countries, challenging retrofit market. Now, hybrids are, as you said, I think that was the main focus, but there are other technologies that can help to reduce fuel consumption, drive efficiency, reduce carbon emissions. We've talked about heat pumps, electrically driven heat pumps in reference to a hybrid heating system, but heat pumps can also be driven by gas or low carbon gas or potentially hydrogen one day. And I spoke with Paul Schwartz, CEO and founder of a company called Thermalift, which is developing a gas-driven heat pump. So I'm here with Paul Schwartz, CEO and founder of a company called Thermalift. Hello, Paul.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Paul, can you tell us in a nutshell who Thermalift is and what Thermalift does?
Well, Thermalift is developing a thermally driven heat pump. Thermally driven meaning that the source of energy can be gas, can be hydrogen, can be solar energy, but we've started focusing on gas heat pump technology for heating, cooling, and hot water in one device.
Okay,
with high efficiency.
To risk getting technical here, for our listeners that aren't familiar with the different varieties of heat pumps, an electrically driven heat pump, it's the electricity driving the compressor, which drives the cycle, and that's the energy input. In your type of heat pump, it's heat driving that process. And that heat could be coming from different sources, as you say, from solar, from combustion or gas. Have I got that right?
Yes, you do.
Great. Okay. And what size of heat pump for houses, for offices, for industry? Where's your focus?
So we're developing our first module as a 20 kilowatt heating, cooling, and hot water system. So 20 kilowatt heating system, about an 8-9 kilowatt or 2.5 to 3.5 ton cooling system. Eventually, as we continue development, we'll have a range of sizes that can go down to very small applications as low as 4 kilowatts or maybe as high as 50 to 75 kilowatts.
Okay, but 20 kilowatts, 20 kilowatts would be right for a house typically. That's the part of the market you're aiming for.
Yes. Residential and small commercial, because what makes our product unique in the gas heat pump space is the concurrent heating and cooling opportunity. So we can provide for refrigeration at the same time we can provide for heating in a convenience store, as an example.
Okay, and your accent gives away that you're not in Europe, you're US based, and cooling is important in parts of Europe, but that heating and cooling presumably is really useful for parts of the US where the winters are cold but the summers are hot.
Spot on. As a matter of fact, in work that we've done, the company has been supported by grants from the United States Department of Energy, from the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And one of the programs with the U.S. Department of Energy, where a report was published on energy savings potential, R&D, and deployment opportunities for commercial building HVAC systems. And that study looked at 300 technologies around the globe and selected Thermalift as the number one potential technology in the HVAC space.
Wow, congratulations and exciting. You mentioned those different heat sources. What will your first products start with, do you think? Will they start with natural gas as a natural gas combustion as the source of heat that drives that cycle?
We will. Natural gas is abundantly available. Pipelines for natural gas are a major source of energy in the building envelope, the existing building envelope. We can reduce the consumption of natural gas by 50%. So we can immediately cut the carbon footprint in that environment in half. And then when we talk about the other fuels, alternative fuels, biofuels and biogases, as they come online, those sources of fuels need to be conserved as much as possible. So by reducing the energy demand by 50%, we can double their total capacity building served versus the existing infrastructure of heating systems.
Okay, just to understand that energy reduction, if we think of natural gas for a boiler, the efficiency will be over 90%. You're using the ambient heat of the air, for example. So if we think in efficiency terms, or those heat pump aficionados will understand COP or SPF, what should we think of in terms of efficiency?
This is a really important question. Because when the food chain discusses electrically driven heat pumps, there's a COP associated with that in the range of 3, 4, maybe even discussions can go up to 5. Mm-hmm. But those COPs vary depending upon outside climate temperatures.
Yeah.
And when temperature drops below the freezing point, COPs drop off dramatically. So you have to be very clear about what temperature environment you're talking about COP for. That's okay. Point number one. Right. Secondly, when energy is created at the electric source, you're burning fossil fuel anyway. Most probably is either coal or gas that's being burned at the electric source. And then that electricity goes through the food chain of distribution. So only 35% of the energy gets to the end point. So total efficiency at primary energy is the real number to look at, the balance between COP and energy. So a thermally driven COP of close to 2 is equivalent to a COP of just about 6 in the electric side.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I guess it's hard to compare the two. Like, as you say, I would say in some parts of the world where we've got renewables contributing half of the mix of electricity, that 35% figure will be higher. But I take your point that you've got to be careful in the comparison, but you're turning close to 2 times as much, turning that gas heat energy input into close to twice as much amount of heat.
Right. So so when you get down to that efficiency number as it relates to the thermalift, right, we are looking at an energy efficiency in the neighborhood of 1.6 to 2 as a COP, as a heating system, between 30 and 50 degrees Fahrenheit, or between 0 and 15 degrees C.
Okay, and that's obviously a big step above a boiler. Paul, yes. Just to finish off with, could you give us an idea of how far along the development curve you are, or how many units you've deployed, or when I might be able to buy one of these products?
Sure. It was founded in 2012. We are entering completion of our laboratory work into the test field environment in the mid-2020, where we have opportunities for deployment across Canada, the United States, and Europe. So we'll be selecting the gas utility companies, and there are a plethora of those utility companies that want to work with us to do pilot programs and field studies. Production is planned to begin into 2021.
Okay, so I can't get one tomorrow, but hopefully in a few years, I might be able to buy one for my house.
Yes, sir.
Great. Well, Paul, thanks for your time. Nice speaking with you, and hope you've enjoyed our heat summit. And yeah, if listeners are interested, they can look up Thermalift online. Thanks, Paul.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Lindsay, we've talked about solutions, digitalization, technology. Point number 4, policy and regulation. And that was one of the big two drivers you mentioned at the beginning. We had a great presentation from a UK body called the Committee on Climate Change, which is set up by government to advise on how the UK should reach its carbon targets. And they shared some of their thinking. It's also published, so if you're interested, you can look on their website, around how heat can be decarbonised in the UK. Lindsay, what were the 3 sort of main options they set out?
Yeah, so they had developed 3 pathways. The first one was a kind of pure electrification pathway. The second one was a more low carbon gas pathway. And then the third one was a combination of the two, where you have a role for both electrification and low carbon gas. And they pulled out the relevance of hybrid heat pumps, where you have electric heat pump combined with a hydrogen boiler as a longer term solution.
Okay, so I guess that backs up what we're seeing from the focus on technology of hybrids having a role, but their options, I think, are all plausible options. There's some really good material in their report on the challenges, pros and cons of both. Now, policy talk is absolutely critical to decarbonising heat, but there is a lot of studies, talks, discussions about what policy we need in the future. To what degree, Lindsay, do you see policy already biting in the market and having an impact on the market?
It's definitely already having an impact on the market if you look at specific sectors. So in the new build sector, new build regulations, if you look at a market like the Netherlands, we're already seeing a shift away from gas boilers towards heat pumps and new builds. If we look at the off-gas retrofit sector, so displacing primarily oil boilers, there's some reasonable movement there. Market like Denmark is one of the the furthest ahead here, where oil boilers are being displaced by electric heat pumps. But the biggest challenge remains the on-gas retrofit sector.
Okay. Now, that on-gas retrofit sector is the focus of a lot of discussion, some action at the moment. And there are various solutions from full electrification, low carbon gases, or combination, as you said, Lindsay. I spoke to Mark Wealdon from a company called SGN, who manage part of the gas network in the UK. And Mark told us a bit about the work that they're doing on hydrogen at the moment. So I'm here with Mark Wealdon from gas distribution company SGN. Mark, you gave a really interesting talk on hydrogen. So for the benefit of our podcast listeners, can you tell us a bit about how you're turning hydrogen from presentation studies into an actual project with customers?
Yeah, so I think the key thing to hydrogen is that we need to demonstrate safety. We need to demonstrate that we can distribute hydrogen as safely as we can with natural gas. And to do that, you need to build a plant. So you need to produce hydrogen. You need to be able to store it. You need to process it, and then you need to distribute it, reduce its pressure and distribute it so it can be burned in people's appliances.
Sure, and you're actually developing a project that is doing this with real customers, with a real network.
Yes, we are. It's a project called H100. It's a suite of 16 projects. It's a program which is looking at feasibility and feed, and also evidential projects that will prove that hydrogen is safe to distribute. The feed studies will then move into construction. We will build a network, a distribution network, and the plan is to demonstrate that that network operates safely and securely, and we plan to do that by mid to end 2021.
Okay, so not that far away.
Not that far away.
And is this a new network, new pipes you're putting in the ground, or is it using existing pipes or a bit of both?
So that's the key. So when we looked at the risk associated with conversion, we decided that actually the risks between building a new network and converting an old network are very, very different. So we decided that the easiest way to prove safety was to do it with new pipes and new materials. So the network that we're going to build, the demonstration network, is going to be a brand new network, so new PE network.
And those pipes, will they be almost exactly the same as the pipes you put in for the ground for natural gas, or do you think you're adapting those pipes for hydrogen?
They are exactly the same. So we've done a lot of work with the manufacturers. We've tested all the materials, so the current PE that we use, the polymers that we use now in PE networks, and they're absolutely compatible with hydrogen. We've also tested the fusion techniques and the jointing techniques that we use now, and everything is compatible. The only bit of outstanding work with materials is accelerated aging, which is underway at the minute. So we're going to essentially proof test the PE to 80 years life expectancy.
Okay, and I started in the middle rather than at one of the ends, actually. But if we go now to the people using it, how many households are we talking about, or buildings?
We're hoping in this first project that we get a minimum of 300, although we're going to build a network that will run past probably 1,000 properties. We need 300. That's really the minimum sample size that we need to demonstrate diversity, and that we need to be able to demonstrate UK scalability. So 300 minimum, but actually the more we can connect, the better.
Yeah.
And because part of the project is to prove that people want hydrogen. You know, that, you know, it's a commodity that people want. Cost is always going to be an issue with hydrogen for the next few years, but there will come a point where that cost drops to an acceptable level.
And then you'll need a hydrogen boiler, presumably inside the house, to finish that end of the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And at the other end of the chain, where's the hydrogen coming from? What colour or flavour of hydrogen will you be feeding into the network?
We will be producing green hydrogen. We have at the project in Fife. The energy will come from a 7-megawatt wind turbine that will be dedicated to the operation of the site. It will need grid backup, but that's just to balance the intermittency from wind. But yeah, it will be green hydrogen.
Okay, great. Well, that's really exciting.
Okay.
And we'll look forward to 2021.
Mid to late 2021.
Mm-hmm. So one of the first projects, I think, to see that at that scale running on pure hydrogen. So
it will be the first.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
So, Lindsay, the last point, the fifth point, is competitors. Now, the heating market's been pretty much the domain of manufacturers, big manufacturers of boilers, of heat pumps, of other products. They typically will sell them to merchants or wholesalers. Installers will then pick up the product off the shelf. The manufacturers will encourage the installers to pick their product. And the installer will then sell that to the customer and install that to the customer. But we're seeing that changing, and partly driven by the things we've talked about, the move to solutions, the digitalization of the supply chain. It's easy to say there's lots of competitors coming into the market. What are some of the types of competitors that you'd pull out, Lindsay?
We're seeing a lot of new startups, some of them coming from IT backgrounds, some of them coming from other backgrounds. But the thing they have in common is that they are trying to offer solutions rather than products. So that's one group, new startups. We then have kind of giant household names who are coming mainly from outside the heating sector, even outside the energy sector, to try and get into the heating market.
And you have one example of that, Lindsay, I guess, is a recent announcement of Shell working, which everyone will know and have heard of, working with a UK company, Passive Systems, to sell hybrid heat pumps to their customers. And Shell, as many of you will know, have invested in downstream energy businesses across Europe, and they have a supply company in the UK, used to be called First Utility, now called Shell Energy, that will be selling electricity and gas, but also hybrid heating systems.
Yeah, that's a good example of a kind of partnership between one of these smaller specialist companies and a big giant of the industry.
And maybe the last new type of competitor would be energy companies. So some of them, if we look at companies in the Netherlands like Nuon and Eneco and Essent, they've been active in the heating sector, selling services and boilers for quite some time. But we do see an appetite from some other energy retailers who would like to sell more than commodity to customers and are actively developing heating businesses or growing the heating businesses they already have. But the manufacturers themselves, Lindsay, they're not all necessarily just sticking to making boxes and selling them to wholesalers and merchants, are they?
No, there's definitely some of the traditional heating manufacturers who are clearly making moves towards being more solutions and services companies and not just products companies. So, yeah, it's an interesting market to follow.
Okay. So, listeners will know at this point we bring out the talking new energy crystal ball and gaze into the future. As I bring that out, I'll just summarize the five themes that we've talked about, Lindsay. So solutions, digitalization, technology, policy and regulation, and competitors. I'd like to gaze into the crystal ball. And it's a bit of an unfair question because the answer is all of them. But if you had to pull out, if you look forward to 2025 to 2030, and you can imagine the changes that have gone in the heating sector, which one of these five points do you think you'll look back on and say, yeah, that was the biggest thing that drove the change that we now see? So out of solutions, yeah. Digitalization, technology, policy and regulation, and competitors, which one would you personally pick?
We asked a similar question to this at the Heat Summit, and a huge number of people said it was policy and regulation. Now, I do think that it's important that policy and regulation is in place, that the policy framework is in place. But personally, I feel that this move to solutions rather than products is going to be the most important change, especially if we're going to decarbonize the retrofit sector and capture market opportunities there.
Okay, now I'm not going to allow myself to vote for the same one as you, Lindsay. I think solutions will be incredibly important as well. If I had to pick another one, I think I would pick either digitalization or competitors. I'm going to go with competitors because I think some of these new competitors will, or current players evolving their position, will bring in a lot of new energy ideas around how to help give customers what they really want, which after all is a warm house rather than a product. Okay, well, I'll put the crystal ball back carefully away for the next episode. Lindsay, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts from our Heat Summit last week. Listeners, thank you as always to join in the podcast, and we look forward to welcoming you back next week for our next episode. Thank you and goodbye.